All right, Razor. Well, if you look at the last two games and you recognize that the Bruins have just dethroned the Buffalo Sabres and the San Jose Sharks, pretty much you've just got to say, this league isn't that hard. The Bruins, they're ready to go, if not to win the cup, at least to compete for the cup. As we welcome you into another edition of Morning Brew with Jaffe and Razor, proudly partnered with Nesson. And as always, find us everywhere where you get your podcasts. You fans are awesome. We've got a bunch of questions for you coming in, Razor, soon. Last time we sat together a couple of days ago was after Philadelphia game, the game that was anything but fun to watch. Now you've had two games, Buffalo Friday and now Sunday as we sit and record. This is Sunday evening for Morning Brew, so we're having different beverages on Sunday evening. They beat the San Jose Sharks, the previously undefeated Sharks. With regard to just viewing this team, my friend, do you view this team any differently now than you did after the Philadelphia game? Or are we just saying, holy smokes, it's game four of the season?
No, I'm not viewing it. I view them as a top third team in the National Hockey League. I viewed them that even after the Philadelphia game, and I view them that more now, probably just looking at a San Jose Buffalo team that are certainly going to be in the bottom third, even though they're undefeated and they're both combined 9-0 or 8-0. Mm-hmm. And Buffalo won't stay there. San Jose might stay in the mix a little bit longer than Buffalo, but the reality is Boston has more class than that. The Bruins have more class than both of those teams and probably another 20 so teams in the league. And so no, I don't view them any different. They took care of business. You said it after the Philly game, they better not lose in Buffalo. And they didn't. They handily took care of business there. And I thought they did the same against San Jose on Sunday.
How important, you and I haven't had a chance to talk about it, how important was it for Linus Ullmark to not only beat Buffalo, but to play as well as he did in Buffalo? We can sit here, we being the non-goalies, and say it's important. Having been a goalie in the NHL, how important was that Friday night win in Buffalo for him?
It was massive. And you can overstate games early in the season. And I am still going to stick to, if he had a loss, it's still an 82-game season. You can bounce back. But the feeling, just honestly, the feeling, every year I had the feeling, if I won the first game and I wasn't in the hole right away, not trying to chase that 500 mark, get back to 500, it felt so much better. And now the fact that he's 2-0, but the pressure to go into Buffalo, play his old team, it's not that comfortable, but he played really well. He was dialed in. He was focused. You liked his professionalism about it. You liked the professionalism. The fact he didn't play the first two games, you didn't hear anything. He had a good demeanor in the interviews. He had a sense of humor. He was just keeping it very even keel. All of those things. So for him, he had a very good weekend to get up to that 2-0 big win in Buffalo. It is more important than just a normal start to a season that he had prior years in Buffalo. This one was different, and to your point, he played well and took care of business.
I don't have a great memory about certain things, so I'm going to ask this question, and you might not have the answer either, because I just jogged something. Your comment brought up a question that I had when you said, you know, he was great about it, didn't say anything, didn't gripe, you know, we didn't hear anything. When's the last time with this Bruins core, and we still have this core, when's the last time that we had somebody here that did? Would I don't want to label anybody. I'm just trying to think. Would Ryan Spooner be the closest maybe to it, where he kind of talked about, you know, it wasn't towards his teammates, but it was towards the coaching staff.
Not playing, yeah.
Would that be? Am I forgetting somebody? Because I have a shit memory. I fully admit it.
I was going to go to Dougie Hamilton along those lines, but he was more aloof and
right,
rather than actual.
I would say he critical. Was insecure. I would say he was insecure more than anything. That I think it came off as that.
Aloof. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think it's a good way of aloof is a fair way of describing that. But I think it was due to his insecurity.
But no, you're right. No one's come out and actually. And even when guys have left, no one's done that, right? No one's left even on the way out and said, and there's some guys that probably felt or didn't have great experiences. There are guys that over the years have been shoveled to the side, but even those guys didn't have anything really negative to say. So yeah, I guess Spooner's right at that top of that list, I suppose.
Yeah. And again, it was more about just complaining, sharp comments, subtly sharp, if that even makes more sense that Ryan. Anyways, we're not here to discuss that. That's a long time ago, before Morning Brew was even a thought, a glimmer in our eye.
Yeah,
that's not waste it. Time. But I was just curious. But no, you're right. I think that, you know, the Boston Bruins, say what you want, and they're not a perfect team right now. Some would argue that they're not a Stanley Cup contending team. And, I think it's going to be hard for them to win the Cup, but they've got a long way to go, a long, long way to go. But still, this core leadership, if you can't get acclimated, comfortable, almost like a warm Bruin blanket, that's what they are. You know, I mean, you've got Bergeron, mm-hmm. you know, in the past you had Z and Kevin Miller, but just from being in the locker room with these guys previous years, pre-COVID stuff and everything, you could tell how inviting, how welcoming, how warm of a bee's blanket, I'll call it, that this team was. Doesn't mean that like a good parent or a good buddy wouldn't call you out for some shit you may have done, but that's okay. You know, who doesn't give crap to their buddies when they deserve it? And then they're still best buds. So anyway, so I think Linus Ullmark, if he recognizes that, which I think he sounds like a really bright guy, and I hear he's a bright kid, he recognizes that. I think his attitude will be just fine. And it is so far. I don't want to go too much into the Buffalo game, but it's hard not to chuckle about the Taylor Hall empty net goal. I don't know if you saw, you know, how, I mean, that wasn't a tap-in. That was like close to like hammering it through the back of the net. If that, if he could have given him the,
that's a suck it.
Oh yeah, it was the old fur knuckle. You know, if he gave him the bird like he did against the Montreal Canadiens, that you remember when he had the glove malfunction?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it was just
that was issue. Pretty much that. That was an interesting moment in that game. I think the best part for me about the Buffalo game, it was just Pastrnak going, because the first couple of games it was not really going, you know.
Yeah, we had touched on it, you know, a few missed nets and just maybe not that same focus, but it came, and he made no doubt about it against Buffalo and did the same San Jose right away. Bingo! All right,
yeah,
got my one timer in. You know, here we go. Starting to heat up already, and that's a massive thing, because Marchand can only get 2 points a night for so long to carry right. this group, and so certainly to have David going against Buffalo, that's a good start. Get out on the road and get that first goal out of the way, similar to a goalie's first win. Get it out of the way, get on a roll. If you can get on a roll early this league, if you can bank points, we talk about the Bruins banking points
always.
Early in seasons,
always.
Banking goals, banking wins, banking stats. If you can bank them, it just makes so your life so much better as a National Hockey League player. I can't overstate that.
Yeah. Cause you know, you're going to go through a down low. You don't think about it, but you know, you're going to.
Yeah. And the one at the start of the season, you know, you're going to go through a lull. So you can keep telling yourself it's the start of the season. I know I'm going to go through this. I'm going to get hot, but it's a lot harder. It just is, because you look and you just know that goose egg's there, and it builds a lot more at the start than what it does in December when no one's paying attention anymore.
Yeah. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but that line, I mean, Pastrnak, you know, Marchand again was all world, everything. Four takeaways in the Sunday game against San Jose. By the way, Pastrnak had 3 shots on net. He had 5 misses, but he's just going to miss. He's just going to. You know, we had those great fans, a couple of fans who provided us with those nuggets, those information about hitting the net 67% of the time, whatever. So you know 30% he's going to miss. You know it. Although this one he missed even more. But fantastic. Bergeron looked fantastic. They absolutely feasted on shark meat on Sunday. Those guys had no idea how to handle them. As soon as they got the puck in deep, and then Marchand and Pastrnak each had at least twice where they were, it was, you know, razzle dazzle. It was, you know, Bill Murray and Harold Ramis from Stripes, and I'm aging myself from
yeah,
that.
You are. But
it was the formation extraordinaire razzle dazzle where they were amazing. So what do you like? What do you make of Brad Marchand after Sunday's game? What do you take out of, I mean, where he said, I basically don't feel like I've even played my best.
Yeah.
You know, and it was matter of fact. That's all it was. By the way, real quick, I saw Brad after the game, just walking out of the building. He got hit really hard in his jaw by the stick of Reimer in that third period. Really hard. I thought it was a cut almost, even though I knew he got hit in the side of the face, there was no visible thing on his face in the meeting, but he said, my jaw, oh my God, it was sore. And he said, I got hit so hard. He's like, I didn't know what happened. And thankfully it wasn't also on his nose. He already had a cut on his legs. Nah, I already had that. No big deal.
Yeah.
But so he's all good. He's all good. So anyways, let me get back to it. Razor, he said he still doesn't feel like he's played to his best. I loved it because it wasn't, I haven't played my best. It was, I still don't think I don't feel it. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that's what gets Brad out of bed in the morning. He has a bit of that complex, and that's what's got him to where he is now, where, you know, I'm, it's never good enough. It's just never good enough. And everyone's still doubting me and people don't believe. Yeah. That's his chip on the shoulder. And I think that's, you know, you talk to all the best players that have played this game and they have that similar mentality. They're always striving for perfection, mm-hmm. but they have the ability to understand that they're not going to always, or they're never going to achieve it, but they're always striving for it. And that's what sets guys apart in the National League, to be able to do that every single morning, to have a guy like Brad Marchand playing at the level he is, saying it's not good enough. And to your point, it's not braggadocious. It's just, it just gives a little insight into why he wakes up in the morning and goes to practice and practices as hard as he does.
I love braggadocious. That's like a mixer of bragging meets supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. I love it. I love it. And you know what? Derek Forbear is braggadocious. I love it.
He's peacock in the North End today. For
oh,
sure.
My God. We've got Razor. Fella. We got Razorisms going, and it is awesome. Freaking awesome. I love it, my friend. But you're right. It isn't. It's just... It was Matt's. I'm going to go back to Matt Sundin for you. So
yeah.
was that what Matt's was to you when you watched him as a teammate?
100%. That's exactly what he was. The Hall of Fame every day. The first one on the bike in the morning. First one taking one timers out on the ice. And I've talked. I've asked Ray Bourque about it, being on alumni trips, and I've talked about this exactly. Like why were you so good? And that's it, I basically gave you the words that he gave me is, I tried to be perfect every single day, but I knew I wasn't going to be able to do it. But that was what I did every single time I got. I tried to be perfect. And if I didn't reach it, I just got up in the morning and tried to be perfect again. And I wasn't like that. I didn't think that way. I tried to, I was grinding. I was just trying to get by, but these guys that are the best, they have that ability to mm-hmm. think that way and not get discouraged when things don't go their way. They just keep shooting. They just keep, you know, going after it.
Yeah. And speaking of that, you know, we've talked a lot about Pasta and Brad the last couple of times we sat down together, but Patrice Bergeron had been, when I say somewhat quiet, only because, you know, we're so used to him doing some great things too. He had a monster line against San Jose, 2 assists, 19-23, 7 shot attempts, 5 of them on net, 18 wins, 10 losses in the faceoff circle. So a dominant performance again from him. I understand that we get so used to the monotony of greatisms from him, you know, or great performances from him. But he had been, when I said quiet, it just, I hadn't noticed him as much. This game I did. The San Jose game I did.
Yeah, the bit of the eye test. And these guys, you know, he's a guy that might take a little bit longer to work in, and it was nice to see him work in game 4, and do what Patrice does. And you know, for the same way for him though, he wants to get going. He knows how important it is to get off to a start and bank some points and get on the board and get his face off percentage up real early in the season. That takes pride in that. And So, it was great to see those guys cooking. Has anything surprised you so far these four games, or what's most impressive to you right now through four games, small sample size?
Most impressive has been the play. A few things. First of all, the play of the top line. And why should I be impressed with the top line? If only because I guess it goes back to what you were just talking about, how meaning they won't take average for an answer, so to speak, but how opponents cannot, you know, they're going to be out there and yet they have no answer for them. Now, maybe it depends on the competition. And again, it's only four games. And I don't mean this. I'm not being a smart ass at all. Buffalo's not good. They're not going to be a good team, but they're going to get good performances. But San Jose's a little bit better. So maybe, but I mean, look, they've got guys out there you think that could perhaps handle the Bergeron, Pastrnak, Marchand combo just a little bit. No, they couldn't. Whether it was, you know, Burns, Carlson.
Well, and to your point too, Philly, you know, in Philadelphia, they roll them over in the second period against a tired line after an icing. And you know they're going to score. Right. So even a really good team that we think is a really good team in Philadelphia can't control them either. That's, you know, they might not get 8 points against them, but they're not going to be able to really control them.
So to me, it's just impressive that because otherwise, I mean, Nosek has impressed me so far. And we're going to touch on that. So he's impressed me with regard to, I think he's playing now where he left off last year. Big concern I had was, you know, he had a career year offensively, and a lot of it had to do with his high-level shooting percentage. And I'm not this analytics guy, but I'm going, oh, smoke, can he do the same thing? Again, I don't care so much about the numbers. I want possession. I want him going, and you know what? Four games in, he has shown that. Now, when we start seeing the Floridas, which we're going to see twice this upcoming week, and we start seeing a Tampa and a Carolina and other big teams, will he be able to be as noticeable? Don't know. I guess I shouldn't even worry about that because we haven't seen it yet. But that's been impressive. Charlie McAvoy's continued rise has been very impressive. I mean, that's what and by the way, I think Grizz has been really good the last couple of games, really good. And I think a lot of it has to do with playing with Charlie again. It's a, hey, I know you, I want to play with you type of thing. I do. I think that's where Grizz feels that he is best. And I feel like the last two games he's been really good.
Yeah, and it's a pretty good awareness for him. Mm-hmm. His numbers are going to look a hell of a lot better playing with that guy than playing down on the third pairing. There's no question about that. And it seems as though they've really locked in the second pairing, right? To assume Riley Carlo is locked, basically etched in stone on a nightly basis now. And to that point, Grizz is either a first line pair or he's a third line. That's a massive difference.
Right. You're right, but ice time, how you feel about, and I think that human side of it, I don't need to tell you, but that human side of the game is so damn important. I know that you know, we get lost in this other pros, it shouldn't matter. Bull, you know what? It just, that ain't the truth. In fact, it may even matter.
It's worse there. It does. It's more the ego and the way you look at yourself is more important in the National League than it is for the 15-year-old kid that's playing Bantam. Yeah, mad that he's on the second power play unit. It's a bigger difference.
I like the way that Clifton played in this game back in. I like the way Derek Forbert played in this game. I mean, his goal was, I mean, it was marshmallow soft. Aiden Hill. let that one just go.
It's a gift.
Right. It's a gift. I mean, holy smoke. Like Ullmark's the first goal for San Jose from the left side was a gift. I mean, that did concern me. I'm not gonna lie. I said on the air, this could be a changing moment. Like, you can't allow this to change the tenor of the game because the Bruins were so damn good in that first.
Yeah, the timing most of and against a better team, you don't get, and you even any team, really, you don't get away with that on a regular basis. I think you got away with it. And we did a breakdown a year and a half ago on Ullmark and his post work. And big guys have to get off of that post. And he was stuck on the post, and that gave up short side. We've talked about it a few times on Nesson. And it is a thing for guys that big that that end up getting stuck there, that can be a problem. So we'll see.
He got stuck, buddy. He got really stuck.
No, he got really stuck. He could barely go down. He could barely go down because he was up against his post so much. And Tuukka, again, is a big guy too, really long, but he would get outside that post on the overlap. It'll be interesting if goalie Bob, how much they work on that. I'm really going to be watching that as the season progresses, if he gets outside of that post so he can take away that short side shot. Because, as you know, in Buffalo, he might have to worry about that backside play. Boston, you don't have to worry. You have to make that short side save. That has to be made 100 out of 100. The backside will deal with that secondarily, but you just can't get caught in between like that. So it'll be interesting how they work through that and how comfortable he gets playing a little bit outside of his post.
I think it's safe to say, Razor, that the head coach was not happy with that goal.
No, it wasn't. He was mumbling.
I don't even know if he was mumbling. I think he was more than – all of a sudden, the director goes, boom, on Bruce after that goal goes in. And, oh, my God, was it every other word.
Giggling.
I know. And then I'm just hearing in my head, cut, cut, get off the goal, you know. And, Butchie was
He was hot.
How about league-wide, all of the injuries that are happening to guys? And I know that injuries happen early on the season, but I feel like as we relate this to the Bruins with injuries to three players, two of them on IR, Nick Foligno, Uncle Nick goes on IR already, and Anton Bleed, after less than one game this year, goes in on the IR. And then Craig Smith dealing with a lingering issue that I don't think is long term. I just think it's, we got to get you through 5 to 7 days of this to get it better. But without knowing what Nick Foligno's injury is, I'm going to tell you, man, it concerns me. We had his last shift on the air. We showed it from the other night, and it was innocuous, but these early season injuries to many, many players is holy smokes, kind of scary, man. Like I almost wonder if these bodies are just breaking down from all this hockey that they've had.
Yeah, there's that. And I have another theory. I'm interested to hear what you think about it, because I didn't know we were going to talk about it, but I was thinking about it the other day. One is, yes, their bodies, the way the offseason, the last 18 months, they've played a lot of hockey on and off. It hasn't been normal for their bodies, the workout, the players. We know all that. My other theory is, though, too, is that are the teams and the players recognizing how long this season's going to be? Mm-hmm. And we saw them push. I think we saw players push through injury last year in a 56 game sprint a little bit more than what we're going to see them push through right now with 80 games, 78 games left. And looking at the fact they're going to play 50 of them in the last 2 months of the season, is everyone pulling back just a little bit on some of these injuries and taking time away at the start of this season to look ahead? And I'm not sure, not every case, there's some cases where it's obvious guys got hurt. A case like Smith, would he be playing last season in a 6 game sprint rather than this season with 82 games? It's similar, those kinds of situations. I gotta believe they're holding guys back just a little bit more than what they have in prior years as well, but there's no question the cadence of the league has been tough on them.
Oh my God. Well, and you know, a lot of these teams got done. They still had time off, but a lot of the guys said, well, I have an 82 game season, so I need to get into amazing shape that I haven't had in a while. And I don't know.
I can finally go and live a life for a little bit. Like, I just lived in a bubble and I couldn't go out and see people. I couldn't. And now summer, I can actually go and like get vaccinated and go have fun. Like, so how much was a focus on a regular season as well? Training season. So,
yeah. But like, what always concerns
me. But it's certainly
but it always concerns me, Razor, when maybe this isn't fair, but when a guy gets injured and I can't tell when he got injured.
Yeah, I know. and an old guy at that. And you know, yeah. Foligno's an old yeah. guy for me. I can say that. He's an old
right.
guy.
Right.
That lingers more.
Always concerns me. And, you know, he had a really bad back last year when he went from Columbus mm-hmm. to Toronto. And is that something? Bleed? I don't even know what it was.
And if a guy like that comes out of his first game where he actually has an opportunity, he's hurt.
Right. Yeah, this is not sore.
Or he better he's hurt. Be hurt.
Right.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He's telling them, no, I'm fine.
Yeah.
So the Bruins call up Jack Stanika. And the Bruins call up Oscar Steen in the game for Sunday. On Sunday, Oscar Steen got his first NHL point. He got an assist. Jack Stanika had one shot on goal. He had 4 wins in the faceoff circle and 4 losses, and he played 11 minutes and 10 seconds. Steen played 10:40, by the way. I found it interesting a little bit that they didn't want Jack Stanika to play fourth line to start the season with the Bruins. Right? Remember, they said, no, we're not. We want him in the top nine. Yeah. But yet then when they call him up, they played him on the fourth line along with Trent Frederick and Carson Kuhlman, and they had Nosek up on the second line, and Nosek was up there because of how well he had played in Buffalo when he got elevated there. I get the reason why, but I just found it interesting. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you did as well. And so I'm glad
it is interesting. Yeah, it is interesting, and it goes to the point of things change real quick in the National Hockey League, and if you play well and if you have a 60 minute, it changes.
Yeah,
and a guy like Nosek and that to that point, there is Stunica could do the same thing from the fourth line and elevate himself, and I think there was I understand the progress, but at some point you have to get the guy in the lineup to allow him to have those opportunities too. And to Nosek's point, I mean, he's taking advantage real early. And now so to that point, Stunica's got to find a way as well. Find a way to get a goal, find a way to get a point, find a way to make a difference. Even if you're on the fourth line playing 11 minutes.
Yeah. It looks like Nosek, my guess next game will be up there, especially on the road, second line.
Yeah.
And it looks like Stunica and Steen will both be around. I wonder if Smith will be well enough to play. If he is, that might take Steen out of the lineup. But regardless, I liked more than the most part what I saw from Steen in his first effort this season. But it's Foligno and Bleed are on the IR, so they're not going to be going. Be shocked if they play this week. In fact, this coming week, I wouldn't be surprised if they missed all 3 games. I liked Eric Howla's game on Sunday, except for the fact that he was 1-for-9 in the faceoff circle total. That wasn't good, but I thought he was good. Other little notes I took from...
He skates fast.
He does. I thought the first forechecker was real good for the most part in that game for the Bruins. They used the net well, side to side, to change the point of attack real well. It opens up low to high. I agree with Bruce, even though they scored 2 goals, they being the Sharks later in the game on Sunday, that they were both off these deflections, and you can tell us how damn hard those deflections are to figure out. I mean, I still thought the Bruins played well in the third period. I did. I thought they played well.
Yeah, I agree. And sometimes those tip goals are product of being in the zone for 15 minutes of a period and 20 mm-hmm. shots, and sooner or later things are going to go in. That wasn't the case. It was just both times they went in and took wristers from the point, they got tipped. And it was just a little bit unlucky more than anything else.
Yeah, or if you're a Shark fan, they were good. They were good tips, right? You know,
go to the net.
Go to the net. Yeah, exactly.
That's right. This is how the blueprint.
Yeah. All right, let's run through some of these questions. We got some more comments and questions that we took in. I love getting some of these in. There was a few people that chimed in via Twitter that asked about Linus Ullmark taking over for Jeremy Swayman. I'm paraphrasing here. Sean Gill was one guy that asked that, and there was somebody else that asked that too that I can't find right now, but there was, trust me on that. I don't think he's taking over. I think you're going to see basically 50-50 for it. Maybe you might see one guy get a stretch and then the other guy get a little stretch here and there. I don't think he's taking over yet. What about you?
No. This is what I said even when Swayman was starting, that we're going to see, they're going to go back and forth. There's three games this week. They're both going to play. Who wins? Right. Who loses? But to that, it is going to be a story every game, rather than past years where the guy was, you know, Tuukka was going to play two thirds and Yarrow was going to play the other third. It is a little bit different this year in that fact. But at the end of the day, the games played are going to be pretty close to.
Yeah, I agree.
Unless someone struggles.
I wonder
that happening.
I don't know, Razor, going into Florida, if it would matter if Spencer Knight's playing or not. I wonder, would they start Swayman then? Would a coach actually go that far to go young gun against young gun? Bobrovsky's playing his ass off so far. I'll give him his credit. But Spencer Knight's damn good.
I think we see Spencer Saturday night, is from what I was
back home, heard. Back in Boston. Okay.
Back in Boston. Okay. Yeah. So probably Bob Wednesday, Bob Friday in Detroit, and then Spencer Saturday night. So that could line up a nice Saturday night Hockey East matinee or Saturday night Hockey East battle. Be cool.
Here's another goalie question from Phil G. Does the goalie tandem remind you guys of Lemelin and Moog pairing, where they were two really good goalies and zero ego between them? I'm not ready to get to that level of goalie goodness, because that was really good goalie stuff between Reggie and Andy. But it's an interesting comment to me, at least. An interesting question or theory, so to speak, or you know.
Yeah, and I like the analogy. I like the comparison. I'm not going to 1989 Stanley Cup Finals, but that is how this is going to play out. Is very similar to that, where they're going to end up playing the same amount of games or very close to it, but it's going to be different stretches at different times. Guys are going to have good months and bad months.
Right. And neither of them, well, actually, they probably have pads similar to Reggie Lemelin's, who was cutting edge at the time, right. Ahead of his time with the Aeroflex. The Aeroflex.
Yeah.
But if one of them had the guts to wear the turtleneck, I would say we may have a similarity to Reggie.
If one of them come out with a turtleneck, they're going to be fan favorites. That's
for
sure.
Oh, yes, yes. Catlin writes in, and is it Guiano? I think it is. I hope so. It's
Catlin. This is, by the way, this has become my favorite part of the show, is you yelling screwing out Twitter handles. Yeah. And I can't, and screwing up names. And some of these Twitter handles are going to get outrageous, and you're going to have to say them. It's going to be so much fun.
I know. It's Catlin. That's Caitlin. Caitlin. Jesus. Katlyn. I am dumb sometimes. All right, here we go. She wants to know, great question coming up. Why is Patrice Bergeron so smooth on the back check? He's almost like a ghost out there, and sometimes it's just mesmerizing. Also, is there a way to tally how many assists Berge and Marshy have had on each other's goals throughout their careers, line mates? Yes, there is a way to figure out how many assists they've had on each other's goals, but do not ask me to do it. So you're out of luck on that one. But there's somebody out there who keeps stats, who's really good at it. They have that. So if you ask Twitter, they'll get it. With regard to why is he so good on the back check? He's so good on the back check because a few things. One, he doesn't stop skating. Never gives up on a play. Two, his stick position is excellent. Three, his vision, the routes he takes are outstanding too. I mean, he takes the shortest distance. He doesn't just attack, he angles, he must see things in a different sense, that he understands the spacing of it. And the other thing I would say is he's strong. He's so strong. So on the back check, when he just gets close enough to you, his stick, he's got a little pick of the stick. His hands are so damn strong. His body is so strong that he can just get back, and he closes gaps, and he's great at it. He's magnificent.
Yeah, but I wouldn't change any of that. He's so strong, and when he gets on your hands, whether it's your stick or whether he's angling you through your hands, he takes it away, and it's all hockey sense before that. That's why it looks so easy. Just why it looks easy for any of these other players that are great at what they do. It's all hockey sense. They see the play happen. They feel the play happen before it gets there. And he has the ability to to recognize where a pass out option is and takes it away. It's brilliant.
Yep. Joel Berry asks, thoughts on Stanika and Nosek, or Nosek at the second center over Stanika. We just kind of talked about that a bit. Joel feels that Nosek is a nice player that doesn't belong in your top six. It's his opinion. I don't think long-term he is in your top six, but I think right now that's what you're getting, especially because Coyle's been better on the wing. Let's be honest too. He's been better on the wing right there. So that's a fair question. Robert McNeil, who goes by Boston Bruins 941. Steen, he felt was much more noticeable today than his previous games. Is he here to stay? Razor, we touched on that too. I mean, he's here for now because of injuries, unless they've got something different that they want to call up from down in Providence, right?
Yeah, exactly. And again, these are opportunities. If he keeps getting points and playing well, and you know, they find a way to keep those guys in the lineup. Listen, coaches want guys in the lineup that are playing well and getting points.
Right.
That's what they want. They don't care about the name or the number or anything else. If you're getting points and you're playing well and you're helping the team, it's amazing. Coaches find a way to keep you in the lineup no matter what they've said.
Isn't
the
that week crazy?
Before. Yeah. It is an amazing thing.
All right, we got two very similar ones. One from Dimitri. And I'm going to say this, and I'm going to get it right. Dimitri Sutteropoulos, okay? Well, I got it right. Can't give me shit. And then one from MJ, who goes by Bankers Love Naps. So do hockey players.
yeah, they do. Yes. My buddy's a banker. He takes nothing but naps. So many holidays, those guys.
It's true. And, you know, a little scotch always on the side, too. And all.
Yeah,
that.
Exactly. Lunch, you know.
Well, both Dimitri and MJ want to know about Trent Frederick. Basically, and I'm paraphrasing again. One guy asked about how much longer to endure Trent Frederick project. He seems to have no identity. Is he going to be tough as nails to play against or not? Who would you, you know, he goes on to ask, who in Providence would you like to take his spot? And then the other one says, what to do about Trent Frederick? I think he has so much more skill than just being forced into an enforcer role. I also think to unlock that potential, he should be at center, not wing. I actually do think he's better at center than wing for some reason. I think it's just that comfort zone. We talked at length during the preseason about, you know, we didn't see enough from him. But I think with regard to how long, I think you got a couple of more weeks of figuring out if he can get up the pace. Now, mind you, I thought he was a little bit better. I've noticed him a little more the last game or two. And he got,
yeah, I thought he was. You know. Yeah, and I thought he's pretty good in Philly, and he's taking pucks to the net with Nosek. Listen, for him, it's similar to what we just talked about, Patrice, and reading the game in the hockey sense. That's where he needs to. That's where he's going to get more pace. He's not getting more pace in his feet in the next couple of weeks. He's not getting more pace in his. He's getting more pace in his experience and recognizing where the puck's going to go. And to your point, that might be why he's better at center, because he can sit back and read a little bit longer. He can process in front of him, whereas the wing, he just feels like he goes flying into the corner, but he's not fast enough to get there all the time. And I think that's why it looks like he's behind. But again, he's a young guy. He's never played an 82-game season in the NHL. Mm-hmm. He deserves, as a first-round pick, he is going to get the benefit of the doubt of another dozen games to figure it out. And they're playing the long game with him a little bit more than maybe a guy like Steen or Bleed.
Right. I agree. Here's a few more before we wrap things up. Jack Kane had a few questions, but one in particular we'll get to. He feels that Pasta's puck control in tight areas, especially along the boards in the O zone, has been much better. Last year, Pasta mentioned this was something he was working on with Brad Marchand. Have you and Razor noticed the same? I also didn't really notice Pasta that much the first two games, but if I feel like he's handling the puck off the wall better, yeah. But I don't think he's also played against teams that are going to, you know, seal you heavily and slam you that much. So I'm not taking anything away from the kid. Love him to death. I'm just saying let's see him go up against certain other teams, and I'll give you a better answer, Jack. That's my take.
Yeah, we'll have a good idea of how much better he's got when he's up against Ekblad the next 120 minutes.
Ekblad, Mackenzie Weegar down there. I mean, these are good defensemen, obviously.
Yeah.
All right, Rich Conrad, can you guys give us more info and explanation on what they're doing with the different line combinations. It seems simple when we had Krejci. He misses that guy. He says, holy, wait, Rich, simple with Krejci. We never had an idea whose goddamn right winger was.
Have he had 1,900 of them.
Holy shit. Yeah, of course. Don't you remember? Move Pasta down, keep him up, yeah. All that stuff.
Pasta was on his line for two shifts in the first period and then gone again.
Right.
On every bi-weekly basis.
Rich, listen, Bruce Cassidy is not afraid to switch lines up quickly. But right now he's dealing with 2.5 injuries, the half being Smith. So that's the other thing that we're seeing. So deep breath time on that. But that's your explanation, is that, you know, with Foligno and bleed out right away, now all of a sudden you got to start moving guys in and out of the lineup. Here's one more. And I thought this is an interesting question. This is from Sergeant Stowe. Okay. Yep. Well, Sergeant Stowe says, not 100% Bruins, but to either of you guys, your thoughts on players who personally or anecdotally that you know of whose room presence, quote unquote, room presence, outsized their skill level. Leaders who are or were fourth liners, sixth and seventh D-men, etc. Sean Thornton comes to mind as a fourth liner, but one of those leaders in the room, others. Oh my God, have there been others that just...
I would say... Pick a Stanley Cup winning team and you'll find one.
Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, listen, Pat Maroon with Tampa. I know that sounds, you know,
absolutely.
I mean, a fourth absolutely. Line guy that,
yeah,
you know, got the experience with St. Louis. And then the next 2 years with Tampa and the belovedness, the, you know, the support that he had, I mean, it was there. Go down the list of teams. I mean, Chicago, you had, I'm going back to the Blackhawk days. I'm trying to think of fourth liners there that were just, you know, Nick Charmelson, well, I guess he was.
Yeah. Well, Dave Boland,
Yes.
Ben Eager, these guys, like those guys, they were forces.
Yeah.
Dustin, the Buffling, big buff. I mean, he wasn't necessarily a leader, I guess, but he had a presence on that third and fourth line. And L.A., Dustin Brown, and every team that wins a cup
has
one or two of those guys on the bottom.
I remember in L.A., Sean O'Donnell. He became a depth defenseman for them, and he was a veteran, but he became a guy who was just there and presence and calm. I mean, every team, to your point, Razor,
Willie Mitchell. He was the D the next year. I think they brought Willie in the year or two later, another older guy. But they all have them. Need them.
Yeah, yeah. And there's a ton, and it's just hard to go through all of them right now. But yeah, there are a ton. But hey, great question. Thank you very much. Awesome questions in general. Awesome, fun stuff. I hope I didn't butcher anybody's name too much. But if I did, I can handle it. I can take the abuse because I deserve it. All right, so that is going to wrap up this morning brew with Jaffe and Razor as we take you through the last two Bruin games, but also just give you a little flavor of some other stuff too. Coming up this week, we've got a Bruins game on Wednesday in Florida, Thursday in Carolina. Razor, you made the great point much earlier off air that used to be holy smokes, this is just going to be a nice run. Like about
bring five, the golf 6 years clubs, ago. Play some holes, get four points.
Right. That was nothing. And now it is anything but. So Razor and I will have the next morning brew for you after Thursday's game. After Thursday's game against Carolina, so we'll rehash both Wednesday and Thursday's game. In the meantime, if you want to reach us, check us out on Twitter or on Instagram. And again, folks, remember, we are now part of Nesson as they are carrying us on Nesson.com/podcast. But really, if you already got us, it won't change a thing. You'll still get our show wherever you get your podcast. And we look to continue doing bigger and better things here at Morning Brew. On average, two shows a week, Morning Brew with Jaffe and Razor coming up. And it's just going to be fun, a lot of fun as we continue through this season. All right, wraps it up. Razor, have a great couple of days. Stay safe, stay healthy. Everybody out there, do the same thing. And as always, especially with Monday coming up, Monday morning, and it looks like it's going to be a rainy, cold one, enjoy that nice, fresh, hot cup of coffee.